From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 15th day of July. Happy birthday to my twins, Megan and Jared. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Dave Chatterton will be here to discuss the agricultural energies. We'll explore a recent article that Giovanni Prezzafontes penned for the Crop Central website about nitrogen applications on soybeans, and then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn for the day settled at $4 a penny and a quarter, up 1 1/4 cents. December at $4.19 3/4, a penny and 3/4 higher. And the March corn futures at $4.36 3/4, a settlement price there, up 2 cents on the afternoon. Soybeans in the August contract at $9.95, down 6. September $9.87 1/4, 6 lower as well. And November at $10.03 1/4, down 5 1/4 cents. Bean meal at $2.65.30, $2.40 lower. Bean oil at $54.56, up 39 cents. Wheat futures soft red in the December contract, 3.5 cents lower at $5.58 3/4. And the hard red December at $5.46, 0.5 cent higher for the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $2.50 higher, $219.27.5 for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle at $322.27.5, up $2.80. And lean hogs at $87.47.5, 27 cents higher for the day, rather 20 cents higher for the day. Crude oil at $65.39 a barrel, that's down 42 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil, a penny and a tenth higher, $2.37.8, and gasoline on the RBOB at $2.12 3/10 cents, just about unchanged for the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 44,374, that's down 322 points, and the S&P 500 is two lower, it's at 6,309 points for the day. We're now joined by Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of Windsor, rather West Bend, Wisconsin. Naomi, thank you so very much for taking some time with us this afternoon. I really do appreciate that. Can you begin by discussing what you think the most important parts of the trade are over the last week to you and of today?
Well, actually, keeping an eye, of course, on any potential for trade and tariff news coming up or any new trade deals. But I think the thing that a lot of my clients today were talking about was this potential storm system coming through South Dakota, Northeast Nebraska, all of Iowa, Southern Minnesota over the next 48 hours has the potential to just get hammered with some pretty severe weather between high winds, potential for rain, of course, and hail. So that's what we're going to be watching tonight. And I kind of wonder if that was some of the reason that corn futures prices traded a little higher today, maybe some of those short positions going to the sidelines just in case this turns into a mega storm. But of course, if it turns out to just be nice rain, the gains that we've had the last couple of days might diminish and we could go back into sell mode as the rest of the week progresses. So we'll want to keep an eye on that storm.
Okay, so on that sell mode side, I know you have probably been talking to your colleagues and looking at the charts. What do they tell you about the marketplace from this point forward and potential pushes lower and or higher?
Yeah, so yesterday we had a nice bullish reversal on corn. So that maybe said that the market was ready to kind of take a break from that negative momentum. So we know that there's this potential to be a bigger crop than the USDA 181 yield, but it's going to take a few weeks to know potentially how big the crop actually is or isn't. So I feel like because we had this little bullish hook reversal yesterday, maybe for the rest of this week, corn prices, soybean prices trade in a little bit more of a sideways fashion until we get a better idea on more weather information and it's potentially some more trade and tariff news as well. So, chart's not looking quite as bad in the short term as what they had been, but the big picture still looks like the market is in a defensive mode on the expectations of large crop overall.
So I have heard recently that there is some worry that there remains enough grain on the farm in storage that it will have an impact through the end of the month of July and into early August, and complicate issues related to basis not rebounding as corn is coming out of South America as well. Are you fearful that basis, even if the futures markets were able to rally some, might widen?
Well, it could widen or just in general stay wide because of everything you said. Plus, if the crop, the newly coming crop coming in, is expected to be large, it's a way that the end users are able to keep their handle and keep prices at bay by keeping that basis wide on the expectations that supplies will be good enough for the coming months. You know, I know that last year the market found its low at the end of August and then had a slow grind higher. But what if this year maybe we find the low at the end of August or early September, but rather than a slow grind higher, what if we just see a slow grind sideways until we get the crop fully harvested, until we get the potential piles of corn coming into the elevators moved? And so that could be something different than last year, and to definitely be aware of. And another reason why prices might struggle to rally in the short term. So in general, I wish I had better news to provide, but right now we're still just operating under this threat of a big supply coming in. And that's going to weigh on prices, both probably from the future side, the cash side, the basis side.
Okay, so this is a question that you're going to get from a lot of producers, I think. I'll just ask it for myself. I made one sale, 5% of the crop, new crop corn, $4.22, which I hoped was my lowest sale for the year. Looking at a 375, 380 cash bid at the moment, and you're telling me, and I'm thinking, this marketplace might trade lower into the fall. How do I handle that situation?
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. So it's something where we've been talking with clients, and some are looking at some option strategies where they're defending in case the market prices go lower, using December corn puts or even some March strategies in case it is a long, drawn-out harvest low that lasts throughout the autumn time frame. So that's one way to, you know, still try to protect value that's there. I would say, though, if you're at the point where you're looking to make a cash sale just because potentially you need cash income flow, when we see signs of a bottom later on, we'll look to do some re-ownership strategies. Another idea would be to, and it's, this one is not for everybody, this has some margin risk to it, selling calls above the market, like out to the March contract, and just challenge the market to rally that way. It would help pay for storage costs, future storage costs, but again, it's marginable. So you really want to understand the risks associated with that. But yeah, this marketplace just shaping up to be different than last year. It'll take a major weather event, or we would need even better demand news than what we already have in the form of a trade deal to just be able to spur this market higher.
Anything we should take up on the soy complex?
Well, looking at soybeans, we're going to continue to be weather watching. The November contract is holding that $10 price point quite well for now, and I think that that likely continues. So we have to, of course, know what the weather is going to be come August. The soybean crush report came out today, a little bit higher than the average trade expectations. So that was really impressive and helps to just keep the story alive about the demand for the biofuels and for the crush. But for the soybeans, it's all about weather. And of course, we still are waiting to find out what is going to be happening with China and any exports that they would be purchasing from us. So we're in a wait and see mentality for that as well.
Hey, thank you much, Naomi.
Okay, thank you.
Naomi Bloom is with Total Farm Marketing at TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's in West Bend, Wisconsin. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On this Tuesday afternoon, over the noon hour, I helped to host FarmDoc webinar related to the changes included in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. You want to check that out. You can do that anytime you'd like, probably on the YouTube website. maybe in a couple of hours, but it'll be up soon. These will have an impact on this year and, of course, coming years' marketing opportunities and what the crop insurance changes might be, as well as the commodity program changes for things like ARC and PLC. You can find those at youtube.com/@farmdoc. That's youtube.com/@farmdoc. That's the FarmDoc Daily YouTube website. And you'll be able to look for the latest webinar there on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and its impact on crop insurance and commodity programs. Let's turn our attention now to the agricultural energies. Dave Chatterton is here from Strategic Farm Marketing. Hello, Dave. Thanks for being with us again.
Yeah, Todd. Thanks for having me. It's interesting times as always here.
It is. However, I don't want to start with the agricultural energies. You're busy today helping producers make sure that acreage is reported. Deadlines are upon us.
Yeah, Todd, we're at that annual acreage reporting deadline. It's July 15th. So if you haven't, you know, certified with the FSA or talked with your crop insurance agent, you better make that call up pretty quickly. It's interesting that last week on Friday afternoon, late after the close, we saw the FSA go ahead and give themselves an extension for 30 days for getting all their information in the RMA system, but they did not extend the crop insurance deadline. So it's a little bit of a quandary. It's very hard to match up and accurately report acres without a completed 578. So a little bit of piecing together going here and, you know, just one of the things that we deal with here along the way.
Yeah, so make sure you get hold of FSA by the end of the day today. Now, turn your attention to the agricultural energies. What have you been watching over the last month?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster here. And of course, it's really primarily been about policy. And over the last month, you know, if you go back all the way really to May, that's when the market bottomed. But we've been on a steady uptrend almost since that point. And mixed in with that, we had the kind of culmination or the peak of the Israeli-Iran conflict, or let's say I hope it was the peak of that conflict. And we had the big spike and then the go down over the weekend here. We've got Trump beating the tariff drum again and talking about things like Mexico and Canada and 30% tariffs. But then on Monday announcing that he intended to place a 100% tariff on Russian goods and reciprocal tariffs for people who are buying Russian oil of up to 500% starting in 50 days. So the market actually reacted a little bit soft to that. It was expecting that, you know, Trump had foretold this agreement or this, you know, this announcement for a while. The 50-day deadline or the 50-day extension here, giving them 50 days was not what the market was expecting. They were expecting more of an immediate concern. So, you know, markets have kind of consolidated the last few days here, but we remain, you know, really towards the high end of the range here. And if you look at, let's say, diesel fuel for an example, 188 for NYMEX futures in May, we got to 265 during that peak of the conflict that we just spoke of. We're currently at about 242, so we've given up a little bit from the highs, Todd, but generally the OPEC cuts that have come into the marketplace or been announced have not been a big bearish element of the market so far. We're still inverted in terms of price. So crude oil, you see the front month above the deferred. Same thing for gasoline and diesel fuel. Indicates the demand in the market has still been pretty good.
Yeah, at 50 days, we'll be in the midst of harvest in the fall. If nothing has happened, that would mean that nations like Brazil, China, India, who have been purchasing Russian oil, would be subject to a 500% tariff. That probably would leave the oil off the market, I would take it, if that's the case. And does that mean that producers would need to think more thoroughly about purchasing their diesel fuel needs for the fall?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I think nailing down a specific of what's going to happen after that 50 days is, you know, the market takes this with a big grain of salt, Todd, and the fact that that's an eternity in terms of negotiating with these sanctions, and a lot can change and probably will change. Enforcing a 500% tariff on someone who, on another country that we believe is buying Russian oil, is a really tough, you know, to implement, I think, over time. So there's a good degree of doubt about how that's gone. Russia historically has been very good at kind of eluding these U.S., you know, trade barriers, and you know, we'll have to see how that shapes up. But I think what you do want to look at here in terms of diesel fuel is that inventories right now are the lowest of the last 5 years. We're 23% below the 5-year average, Todd. And We're getting the tropics heating up here. We've got a storm moving into the Gulf here midweek next week. It doesn't look horrible at the moment, but you know how quickly those things can change. So any kind of supply disruption here that comes out of left field is really going to be kind of an igniter to a leg higher in prices. So I think you certainly want to be looking at what can I contract fuel for, how full are my tanks, and having a little bit under your belt, so to speak.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again in another month.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. There's a new article about the application of nitrogen to soybeans on the Crop Central website, authored by Giovanni Prezafontes, John Jones, and Emerson Napsiger, each of them an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We'll start with the conclusion is that on almost all soils in the state of Illinois, adding nitrogen to a soybean field to increase yields generally doesn't statistically and certainly isn't economically viable. There are some places, we'll explore that in the future. However, today I wanted to talk to Giovanni about high-yielding soybeans and nitrogen and what they found in this particular study.
I think there is a common perception that those high-yielding soybeans fields will likely to respond more to supplemental nitrogen. And that was not the case. At least under the conditions of our study, our data does not support that assumption that high yielding soybeans will respond more to nitrogen fertilizer. There is a figure in the article that shows the relationship between yield response to fertilizer and nitrogen and the yield of the untreated control. And what we found was that a negative relationship between yield responses and the yield level of the untreated control, meaning that as the yield of the untreated control increased, we saw yield responses to nitrogen tended to decrease.
Do you know why?
Yeah, we think that, like if you think about the soil, our soils, our mollis soils in central and northern Illinois, I mean, those are highly productive, right? So if you think about soybean, right, so where they get their nitrogen from, it's we think that about 50 to 60% comes from biological nitrogen fixation, right? That's the symbiotic relationship that they have with the Brady rhizobium. And 40 to 50% comes from the soil. So if you think about those high productive soils, if you think about mineralization and nitrogen supply from the soil, conditions that favor high yields will also favor organic matter mineralization. So what that means is that, if the weather is good and you're setting up a good yield potential, right? So that also means that, there's a lot of nitrogen being mineralized from the organic matter, and those nitrogen are going to be available for the soybean to take up. So even though in high yieldings, and we saw that our Urbana fields and Monmouth field, they had years that we had 80 to 90 bushel soybean per acre. So yes, they do require more nitrogen, but again, there's a lot of nitrogen being mineralized from the organic matter that is going to supply most of that nitrogen requirement in high yielding fields.
That's Giovanni Prezafontes. You can see the article that he has written along with John Jones and Emerson Napsiger on our website. The title of that article is Nitrogen Fertilizer and Soybean Yield, What We've Learned from Multi-Year Trials in Illinois. The conclusion reinforces that most soybean fields in Illinois are unlikely to benefit agronomically and even less likely to benefit economically from nitrogen fertilizer applications. We'll explore this topic more in the future here on the Closing Market Report. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Find us online at willag.org to listen to anytime you'd like. There you'll also find agricultural programming articles from the crop scientist, the ag economist, and the animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast with Don Day. He's with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, looks like we're going to turn things, well, a lot hotter, and they'll be humid as well. Can you tell me about the changes that are coming across the United States?
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit going on. First of all, we're going to see likely a tropical depression, might become a tropical storm in the Gulf called Dexter. We have an unusually strong cold front coming out of Alberta and Saskatchewan into the northern plains. Parts of the Dakotas won't even get out of the 60s today or tomorrow. And then we've got some heat that's going to be building across the southern plains and expanding into especially the central, eastern, and southern areas of the Corn Belt as we get to the end of this week and this weekend.
Tell me about that heat and the humidity both, please.
Well, we're going to have a pipeline of air that's going to be coming right out of the coastal Texas, Louisiana Gulf areas, and then that's going to get directed to the north-northeast. So the transport of the air mass is coming in. The source region is coming just from very warm, humid areas. And it's a pattern that's going to get a little bit on the stagnant side of things, especially when we start looking after the 20th and into the last 10 days of July. So there's going to be a lot of heat, a lot of humidity in there, and there's going to be occasionally some thunderstorm activity as well.
What do you think it will mean for temperatures as we get through this last couple of weeks of July? We're in the middle of pollination. Things above 93 degrees tend to be a problem.
Well, we are going to see temperatures that are going to get into that territory. Now, one thing that may throttle back those temperatures a little bit will be the chance for clouds and shower and thunderstorm activity that could cause, you know, temperatures to maybe not be as persistently hot. Thing is while we may not spend too much time in the mid to upper 90s, certainly if you average the nighttime and daytime temperatures are going to be very warm through that period.
That is typical of recent years where the overnight lows are higher and the highs during the day are not in that 98, 99, 102 degrees, but lower level. Still, the average comes out to be a higher average throughout the period.
Yeah. Now, one thing that, and we've talked about this in earlier interviews, is that while we do see the heat coming in, one thing that's happened this summer is when we do get heat domes, they don't tend to last as long as forecast, and I think that'll be the case with this as well.
Thank you much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org, willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.